Yeah, let's go.
Hey guys.
This is start over.
Yeah, you gotta start over. Hey, what's up, guys? This is episode 3 of the Spectre podcast with me, Tim Schreckengost, and Brady Mason. Good morning, Brady.
Good morning.
How are you doing today, bud?
Tired. It's early. Well, it's actually not that early, but I started early, so. Yeah. Yep. We'll see how this goes. We'll see if my brain's functioning to answer any questions today. I already know question 1's going to be a tough one for me to answer.
That's an easy question.
Yeah, it's an easy one to ask. The hard one to answer.
Yeah, right. I mean, yeah. So anyway, guys, I just wanted to apologize for a brief hiatus, a few weeks in between episodes. I was trying to let that go that long. I know next week might be a little difficult because I think Brady's going to be down at our warehouse or at the manufacturing facility for the week. So it might be, maybe I'll bring one of the other guys in here and record a podcast just so we can stay on track. I just want to apologize again for that, but hopefully we'll answer some of your questions. And as always, if you do have any questions, just hit us up on social or on our website, Spectre Broadheads, inspectorbroadheads.com. You want to get after it, dude?
Let's do it. All
right. Question number 1 comes from Big E83 on Archery Talk. What's the best vein for big fixed blade broadheads?
What are we talking big? Like the original Fred Bear broadhead? That's a pretty big fixed blade broadhead.
Yeah, and I actually had these questions ready to go like a month ago.
So and then we hit our busy season, yeah. So.
I can't remember exactly what happened or what the details were. I try to include details. But I think, you know, like when I think of big fixed blade broadheads, I think of like a Striker from G5.
Okay.
Something like that, because it's bigger than a Slick Trick. You know, a Slick Trick is like an inch and a 16th or whatever.
Yeah, inch and eighth, stuff like that.
Yeah, so which are a little easier to tune. And I think what, you know, if say like a Striker, you know,
Striker, like a Thunderhead, something like that.
Yeah, I don't actually know what a Thunderhead is.
The other, I think NAP.
NAP?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know, for fletching like that, normally, for fixed blades at our shop, we normally stay away from like blazer veins or those little low profile or 2-inch or 1.5-inch veins. We try to go with a 3 or 4-inch vein. Mainly because you need that better stabilization. I mean, typically in today's bows, broadheads, fixed blade broadheads for sure, are going to tend to plane. So you're going to need that control on the back end of your arrow to keep your arrow as straight as possible and as consistent fly good. So we try to go with a longer vein. It doesn't have to be extremely tall. Like pretty much all veins, for the most part, have the same height, but the length is definitely important. I've even seen people shooting with feathers because feathers seem to react really well with fixed blade broadheads, and how you fletch them is important too. I mean, everybody's talking about helicals and offsets, stuff like that, but with fixed blade broadheads, at least big ones that do plane a lot, you almost want a straight fletch or maybe an offset. The helical adds a lot of spin, and that spin is what can cause the planing, because your broadhead, it's spinning that fast, that much, it'll catch wind like crazy and just veer off different directions. It might be good up to 30 yards, and then when you get up to 40 and 50, you're hitting a foot to the left. And we were actually doing that this weekend. I was down at my farm that I worked on pretty much all my youth, and we're shooting bows. They're getting ready to go out west hunting, and the one guy was trying out some G5s and the Montex. And he's like, "Oh, let's see how these shoot." And we were back at 50 yards. He was hitting 8 inches high and left consistently, but his field tips were hitting dead on. So I told him, I said, "Go up to 30 yards, see what happens." 30 yards, it was perfect. 40, it was good enough. I mean, he's off by maybe an inch or two. But the further back he went, it just the worse it got.
Yeah.
And yeah, he's got the low profile vanes, 2-inch vanes with a helical on it. And it works great for mechanicals, but not so much fixed.
Right. Do you think that trying to align your broadheads with the fletchings, do you think that helps at all with flight?
I mean, I'm not an aerodynamics person or aerospace engineer, but I have heard from a lot of people and a lot of shooters that do use fixed blade, and a lot of traditional shooters, they do try to line up their feathers, and it makes sense because everything's twisting at the same rate. You're not having different air streams. So you're coming off of the broadhead, typically it's a 3-blade. You're going to have like 3 different air streams coming off that, and you want those to align with your feathers so they don't interfere as much. Rather than if they do interfere, then it's going to end up with 6 in the end because it's going 3 and 3, a lot of interruption, and who knows what's going to happen.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to do that. And I've had guys do that. Over at the shop, they've talked about that. And personally, I've done that with fixed blade broadheads to try to get them to tune right, to fly straight. And that does help, and it can help avoid hitting your riser too if your air is cut a little too short. I've ran into that with fixed plates before.
Yeah. Also, with fixed blades, just like you tune a bow to anything else, tune your fixed blade broadheads to your bow.
Right.
So people bare shaft tune with field tips, especially if they're in like target archery or something like that, where it's pretty important. I mean, bare shaft tuning's a whole different level. You don't need to do that. But what you do is basically you tune in your bow to your fletched arrow like normal, and then you go back and you shoot your bare shaft and try to get everything to group together, and then you make your adjustments. You do the same thing with a fixed blade broadhead. You're going to shoot that one broadhead into a group of field tips, and if it's hitting off, you got to keep making your adjustments until they're all grouping together. Mm-hmm. And then the further out you go, usually they end up flying the same.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Sounds good, dude. All right.
Next question.
Next question is from Bowtecker 82nd.
That's a different name.
Yeah. When you shoot, do you always shoot at a 3D or a spot target?
Ooh, when I shoot. When I'm sighting in, I use a spot. And I try to use as small a spot as I can get that I can see at that distance. Mm-hmm. Get it sighted in, get it as pinpoint as I can get it. And then once I know I have my pin set correctly or my tape, whatever it is you're using, then I'll start throwing the 3D target out there of the animal I'll be hunting either that season or the most that year. Mm-hmm. So, like in spring, I'll throw out some turkey targets and shoot turkey and make sure I'm hitting them in the right spot. And fall, like now, even actually all summer, I've been shooting deer targets, just making sure I'm hitting them in the right spot where I can get that heart, lung, and liver all together. And that's just good practice because when you're out there in the field, there's not a spot on a deer. I mean, there might be a spot, but it might not be in the right place. So you just got to know where on the body to shoot. But to sight in, you definitely want something you can completely focus on. That way your equipment is as correct as possible. Because if you, basically it's like shooting at the broadside of a barn. If you don't pick a spot and you just say, I'm going to shoot the center of it, and you shoot, well, you don't really know exactly where you're aiming, but maybe you hit close and you're like, oh, I'm on. And then you go to shoot something smaller. And when you shoot that something smaller and you miss by a couple inches, well, that's why, because you didn't really focus it in.
Yeah. Yeah, man. That's what I shoot golf tee or something like that when I'm mm-hmm. sighting in, you know, just that small object. And then, you know, I kind of bounce back and forth depending on where I'm at and conditions, you know, if I'll shoot a spot or if I'll shoot a bag target with spots on it. You know, I try to set the 3D targets out further, so I'm like dialing in at these closer distances, and then I'll shoot the further distances at the animal, to try to help with accuracy, you know, that makes the close-up shots super easy to do that. So, I do about the same thing.
Okay, yeah. I'd say I think you'll find a lot of people do pretty much the same thing. For sighting in, they'll choose a spot or even make an X or a cross. They put the vertical line and then the horizontal line so they get their windage right and then they get their elevation right. And then they try to hit the center of that cross.
Yeah.
And then from there, they'll start shooting their 3D targets.
Yep. And if you just have one target, you know, if you just say if you just have one 3D target, that's the only target you have. If you do want to sight in, you know, you can just tape an X on there or crosshair and aim at the center of that.
Yep.
That always helps. Or you can, you know, plug golf tee in there, you know, and just
aim. Yeah, something that's a little different than the color that you're shooting.
Oh, here's another broadhead question.
Oh, Lord. Getting close to archery season, so I guess they should be a little more common now.
This is from JV3 Hunter on Archery Talk. Which is more important when it comes to arrow stabilization and broadhead flight, height of vane or length? I think we already answered this.
It's a combination of both. I mean, you can get your low-profile long vanes or your low-profile short vanes, and you can get your high-profile long and short. It's how your bow tunes, how your bow shoots. I mean, from the guys at the shop, I like shooting my 2.1-inch vanes, and I'm not, like, being picky. That's just the length that the vane comes. And I believe they're 3/4-inch height. Mm-hmm. Some of the guys, they're a little more, but that's just how my bow tune.
Yep.
No one else really uses those ones. They use 2.5, and one of the guys even used 1 3/4-inch length. And they're 1/2-inch high. So, and they shoot great out of that. When I shot those, it just didn't seem to want a pattern as well. So you just got to find which one works best for you. But typically, the longer your vane, the more stabilization and the more profile. So the higher your vane, the more stabilization. But this will typically slow your arrow down too because there's more wind resistance and drag. So you gotta pick and choose what you want.
Yeah, find what's best for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, testing and you know, it's kind of the best time to test is not
right a week now. Before season. Like,
yeah.
If you're gonna do it, test it right now. Like this week, next week, get it done. Yeah. So, in a few weeks, especially if you're going out west, season started already in some places.
Yeah.
You gotta get ready. You gotta be ready.
Yeah. Yeah, you should have been ready a month ago. I just started shooting. I got, what, a month and a half till season opener here.
Oh, yeah. Man, I'm stoked for that.
Yeah. Yeah, I did get my doe tag. They cashed my checks.
About time.
Yeah, they cashed the check. So they had 18,000 left for 2Ds, so I was like, all right, we'll get after it.
Yeah.
All right. Next question, question number 4. This is from Buggy0211 on Archery Talk. A buddy of mine has caught my interest on a hunting saddle. He said he'll never go back to a hang-on after using a saddle. Who's used one? And thoughts on them? Where I usually sit is a good mile hike at least, so the really low weight does intrigue me. You know anything about saddles?
I don't even know what a saddle
is.
You
know what a saddle is? All right. So it's,
do you know?
Yeah.
All right.
So I've never used one. And I've only listened to people talk about them. So I figured it'd just be kind of good to touch on this because it's a hunting-related question. And the people that have tried saddles absolutely love them. So I think they're basically what it is you have like steps around. So you have your steps to go up the tree.
Right? Mm-hmm.
And instead of having a platform, you have, I believe it's like stakes around the tree. Or something around the tree, some sort of steps or something to stand on that goes around the tree. And what the saddle does is you kind of hang on it. You know, you're fully suspended up there, you know, so you're not going to fall or anything. And you can like go around the tree with ease.
Oh, okay. All right. I'm looking it up right now. So basically, you're on a safety harness.
Yeah.
And you like have 360
yeah.
view or.
Yeah.
Ability in the tree.
Yep, and super lightweight.
Well, yeah, there's hardly any equipment. I mean, there's equipment, but All right, I can see how this works. Yeah, that'd be really neat, honestly. I'd love to try that. The only thing that I don't know if you can do, or maybe you can, like, I could be wrong. I like to take my naps, and yeah. I don't know how well that'll work. I mean, you might be able to take a nap in that thing, but it might be kind of scary.
Just hugging the tree.
Yeah, this tree hugger now.
Yeah. I mean, it seems to be extremely functional to do that. So, but if you guys have any experience with saddles, let us know what your thoughts are. Neither one of us have used them. I've just heard people talk about them. They say, like, yeah, they'll likely never go back. But if you're filming,
you need something.
Yeah, you need something if you have a double set or whatever. But you have kind of a different goal in mind
mm-hmm.
for filming.
It's not just killing. It's killing and capturing.
Right.
So harvesting and capturing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't say kill.
All right. Good with that one?
I'm pretty good. I'm curious now. I might have to go buy one and try it.
Next question. This is number 5 from Late Bloomer on Archery Talk. Welcome to the game, my friend. I have had to get a new piece of property to hunt, and I have set my camera and my feeder out. I've always used my camera to basically do my scouting for me. Does anyone have any ideas or suggestions for me so I can improve on scouting? Do I get any tree? Do I wander around and look for beds? Do I continue letting my camera do the work? I don't want to run any deer off, but I don't want to do too little also. Anything helps a rookie, and thanks.
That's a lot.
Yeah, I mean, when I think of scouting a new piece of property, I think of going in like March.
Yeah.
February, March, and looking for beds, looking for used paths,
mm-hmm.
buck rubs. You know, sometimes you can even still find scrapes because they do scrape all year long. You know, looking for thick, you know, high elevation for bucks. You know, on the not elevation, it's kind of basically like the top of the property. Probably gonna be bucks bedding there. You know, water sources. Look for trails there. Sheds, of course. Kind of map out any feeding, you know, any feeding opportunities, whether it's fields or acorns, any of that hard mast, and grass too.
Yeah.
You know, but typically when I scout a new piece of property or like public land, you know, it's not right now. It's, you know, I let my camera soak now. You know, I'll check them maybe once a month. But if I'm scouting a new piece of property, you know, I'll go look for hot sign if I'm going in. Like, I would rather kind of find some locations using, like, Onyx Maps or something like that and go in when I'm hunting and set up. And then if there's not really anything, and you kind of use that as your scouting, you know, where you're actually in there hunting and to find some hot sign. Because if you can just kind of poke around quietly for hot sign and not leaving a whole lot of scent, you know, as best you can, you do all right, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I typically like to go in the winter after the late season's over, and you can really see the deer trails then and find out where they're bedding, and you're not worried about spooking them. I mean, yeah, you're going to bump them, they're going to run, but there's not that hunting pressure, and they're going to be back. They have all year to come back. So that's when I really like to go track them, figure out where they're at and what their tendencies are. For a new piece of property, definitely look at, if you can find a bedding area, great. Any fields or food sources, and then a water source. And if they're real close, then that's your honey hole. Like, you're going to want to be right there. But if there's pretty much some distance in between them, deer are path of least resistance for mm-hmm. the most part. And they typically like straight lines. So if they're going from bedding to feed, they're going straight to the field. That's yeah. it. They're not wandering around big circles and then coming. They're going straight there to here. And you're going to want to pretty much just watch that, see where they're coming out at. So for scouting purposes, in the summers and stuff, I like to physically go out there myself and just sit on top of a hill and just watch down the tree lines. See what deer are coming out, where they're coming out, and you'll get a pretty good idea of, like, they tend to come out of this corner or in the middle, and then like why they're doing that. So then in the daytime when they're bedding or sleeping, whatever, go down in there and see why they're coming those ways and see if you can find those exact paths. If you do have like mineral out or feed or something to get them to come out to, it is great to put trail cameras on them, or even further down the paths. But as I get closer to the season, like right now, I'll go sit in my tree stands and I'll just wait. I mean, I'll get all scented up, camoed up, whatever. I don't want the deer. Pretend I'm hunting just with no weapon. Mm-hmm. And I'll just sit there and watch, and I'll see what the deer do. And even if my setup's good, because I'm pretty much troubleshooting everything. If I'm in a, like, I feel like I'm in a good spot, and the deer come out 5 yards further down, and there's a branch there, mm-hmm. well, then I either need to trim that branch or I need to move my stand a little bit just to make sure everything's right. So I do like to personally get out there. But as the season really gets close here in the next 2 weeks, 3 weeks, my cameras are doing all the work. I put out those Cuddy Link cameras, and I don't want to go mess with anything else because I'm even getting ready to do some crick setups. So okay. I don't know where the crick they're crossing. I found like 3 big crosses, so I'm going to see where the bucks are coming across, and I'm going to set 3 cameras there and put one up in my food plot. That's fairly close. I don't mind going to and checking. And, yeah, I won't be spooking all those deer down there and stinking up the area, and I can see which crossing they're coming out of, and then I know where to set up for the fall.
Yeah, you can set those Cuddy Links up throughout your property and then set up the one that you check, which could be just, you just set it.
You can set it in your backyard. You can put it in your living room for all that matters.
Yeah, as long as it's close enough, and you can just check that one. You can have all the pictures sent there, so that's pretty cool to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, man, just all year round. Yep. Scout all year long.
Especially, like, guys out in Kansas. Like, we can't get out there all the time, but in the farm that we hunt and like we lease, the farmer out there, I mean, he's doing his job. He's planting, he's harvesting, he's doing everything that he needs to do. But while he's doing that, he'll sit there on the field after work or something, and he'll just watch the deer. And it tells us, like, and he'll... like, say, oh, this area is going to be a good one this year, so we'll hunt that maybe hard or set our cameras up there. But he does a lot of the scouting the same way. He does it in person. He sets up cameras, and, I mean, you got to do both. I mean, you can put just cameras, but the camera can only catch so much because maybe the deer walk behind your camera. You never see it. But
binoculars are your friend.
Yes, unless you can't look through them like me.
Oh, you can't look through binoculars?
No, I close one eye.
Oh. So you need a monocular.
Yes.
Yeah. That's easier to transport.
I just grab a scope. Yeah. Like, no gun, just a scope, and I look through it, put the crosshairs on.
Nice. Nice. That reminds me of Homeland 3.
Yeah.
It has the remote and the scope on it. And changes the
changing channel.
Neighbor's TV. Mrs. Heff or Hess or whatever. Hess, I think. Anyway.
He's reminiscing now.
Yeah. All right. Question number 6. Interesting question. The tree stands. Who hunts at heights of 8 feet or less with good results with a hang-on tree stand? What kind of sets are your favorite? Just wondering if folks have a lot of luck hunting at lower heights. This is from Mr. Brake Man on Archery Talk.
So, typically, and what I like to do is to get as high up in the air as possible, while still being able to hunt the area well. Like, if I can get up 30 feet, 35 feet, which is very normal for me, that's high up.
That's ridiculous.
But I'll go up there because now I'm completely out of line of sight of deer. They're not looking that high up. Mm-hmm. But there have been times where I can only get, and no kidding, 5 feet off the ground. Like, I could stand, basically, and be fine, but I'd rather sit. Mm-hmm. And I would just sit there, 5 feet. There was branches above me, couldn't quite get up the tree, and everything was real thick, so there's a nice heavy canopy, so I could see underneath, but if I got up too high, I wouldn't be able to see anything. Mm-hmm. And I've hunted that, and I've had luck. You gotta hunt where the deer are, which means whatever the woods provide you use.
Yeah.
And then you gotta hunt what's possible.
Yeah, play the wind.
And if you don't like sitting that low, ground blinds. Ground blinds are great, and they hide you completely.
Yep.
So... yeah, I've had luck. I've had friends have had luck doing that. I actually have a friend that won't go above 10 feet because a little nervous about heights, mm-hmm. so he'll stay down low. And he kills more deer than anyone I know. So it doesn't matter how high you go. I just like that advantage of I can look down on everything and I can see out as far as I want.
Right. Yeah, visibility is yeah. huge. Yeah. I listened to the Knock on Archery podcast with John Dudley, and he talked about using a thing called a hex suit.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, like, they just... what the suit like allows you to do with turkey hunting and deer hunting, it allows you just to, like, sit in a chair in the woods, you know,
yeah,
just like in a lawn chair, which would be nuts, you know, mm-hmm. because the deer can like see whatever.
Yeah, I understand how that's supposed yeah. to work and what it's supposed to do. I'm not gonna go into my beliefs on it.
Yeah,
but. I've heard people talk about it. I've seen videos.
Yeah. I like the
truth. I know all about it.
Yeah.
I'll leave it at that. That's yeah. all I'm going
to
say.
It is wild, you know, just to be able to sit, like, eye to eye, like, there. That's pretty cool.
And since we're kind of talking about that, with camo, just in camo in general, camo's great. You can get the real expensive camo. You can get the army camo, what it's real cheap, whatever yeah. it is. Camo don't matter. One of my first bucks I ever killed, I was wearing blue jeans and a red hoodie.
Yep.
And I was after football practice, so I was stinking, but the wind was just right.
Yep.
And the wind was blowing in my face, and it came in front of me. So I don't know. Camo's more for us.
Yeah.
Like, I know when I wear camo, yeah. I'm hiding from other hunters that might walk by. I don't want them to look up and see me and then, like, oh, no, whoops, or see me and then... put a stand up right beside me. Like, I'd yeah. rather just nobody know where I'm at, and that way it's more natural than anything.
Yeah, and it conceals some of your movements.
Yeah.
That's the...
nice flashy colors. That, yeah. Like, they'll see that a little more.
Yeah, solid colors, they see that. Or just solid objects.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know, dude. I hunt usually, like, 15 feet. Depending, if I'm in a climber, I'll climb up, you know, same thing, like, visibility.
Mm-hmm.
I won't go 30 feet. I sat in a 30-foot stand once last year, and I was like, you know, it's like straight, like the ladder is straight. And I looked down, and I'm like,
it's really sketchy, especially when the wind picks up yeah. and you start swaying. Yeah. It's not like a little sway. When you're up that high, you're just whipping back and forth, and like shooting's actually really tough. Yeah. Then. But usually right before dark, wind quits anyways, so.
Yeah, I mean, that wind is perfect for napping.
Yes, it is. Oh, that it's like rocking me like a baby. I yeah. just pass right out. And I usually try to wake up, like, you know, prime time, an hour and a half before dark. And a couple years ago, I woke up, and it was like the last 5 minutes. And when I looked down, so I like tightened the tether on my safety harness, mm-hmm. and I just leaned forward and fell asleep. And when I woke up, my head was dangling, and there was an 8-point right underneath me. I'm like, huh, okay. Reached up, grabbed my bow, it walked out a couple yards, and I shot it.
Oh, man.
Just like that. I was like, yes, that never happened.
Trophy pick's still waking up. Sorry, guys.
Yeah, my eyes were a little blurry. I had to keep rubbing them.
just took a nap and just woke up. That's awesome, dude. Congratulations on that buck.
That was a few years ago, but thanks. Yeah.
Did you kill one last year?
I don't think I did. No, I passed up on a few. I was holding out for just one. And some kid that trespassed shot it. So, but that's all right. I mean, he was a young kid. We let him have it.
Bugger.
Yeah, that's whatever. I mean, now he's into hunting, but yeah, no more.
know your boundaries.
He knows not to go there anymore.
Yeah, know your boundaries. Don't trespass. Hunt where you're supposed to. Where you're allowed. Be ethical.
Ask.
All right. Last question.
Last one. For the day,
number 7. We just got 7 today. I got to get on archery talk and pull some more. All right. How many arrows do some of you like to have on hand and ready for use as hunting season begins? I'm down to 11 of my current arrow, and I typically like to have at least 1.5 dozen. Some that stay in the quiver with broadheads for hunting, and most of the others tipped with field points for practice. This is from Nico on Archery Talk.
Okay, Nico.
What up, dude?
I know exactly where you're coming from with a dozen and a half arrows. I like to have two dozen ready, like built, ready, throw on tip. But that's also because I like to, my quiver is a six arrow quiver, but there's little holes that go through in between each arrow and then some more. And I can fit 13 arrows in my quiver, and you're dang right, I fill every single one of those holes. And each one has a broadhead or a thumper on it for small game. And 13 arrows. I don't mess around. I fill that quiver up. And I have probably four or five for deer. And then I have some junker broadheads on for if it's turkey season for turkey or for coyotes or squirrels or whatever is going to walk in the woods that I can legally shoot, I'm shooting. So, and there's one time I started with 13 arrows and I got all the way down to the last five of my deer arrows before prime time. You know, like an hour and a half before dark, I don't shoot anything else. Like, I'm done. I got my practice in, but that time I got squirrels. I even got a pheasant. I got
like one day, like one
that
sit.
Was one sit.
What? Oh my God.
Yeah. And I think I. No, that was here.
Whoa.
I missed two squirrels, and that was it. And that's because I was having a little too much fun, and I thought, maybe I can hit one running. And it was running down this little log. And as it was running, I shot, and I was, like, right behind it. I'm like, oh, that was close. So I knocked another one real quick, and it was sitting on a tree. I was like, maybe I can pin it to that tree. And right when I shot, it was a little red squirrel. No, it wasn't. It was a fox squirrel. It was, like, a red, mm-hmm. like, yeah, well, that thing jumped my string so fast, and I drilled the tree where it was sitting, but it climbed up and started, like, hissing at me. Then I shot it again, but this time it was sitting still, so.
You got it?
Oh, yeah, I got him. I got him with a thumper.
Oh, man.
But, yeah, so I like to have a ton of arrows, and even right now I probably have a dozen and a half, and I just got another dozen that I'm going to be building, and those dozen will be for deer. And then the other dozen and a half will be for the rest of, yeah, fun. Pretty much the rest of the target season where I get to go to IBO shoots, like local shoots, stuff like that. And then for small game, whenever season comes around. How about you? What do you like to do?
Man, I don't even know how many arrows I have right now. I think I have like...
Four?
No. I might have 11 or 12.
Of all different kinds?
No, all the same kind. I think it's maybe. I don't know. I just fleshed a bunch on Friday. So they were bear shafts, and I just cut them and fleshed them. I like to have a dozen going into the season. Like 12.
Good ones.
Like when the season starts, like that 12.
Mm-hmm.
And I usually have three with broadheads on it. I never really shoot small game with a bow. But, you know, I probably could.
You gotta try it.
Yeah.
It's well worth it.
Yeah. I only have a four arrow quiver now. But on my old Matthews, I had six. I always filled the quiver
mm-hmm.
with the appropriate number of arrows
per
slots. So, but I would always have it full just in case I needed an arrow for something. But I never had small, I just had field tips on those. On the extras, but usually three broadheads. So this year I'll probably have three broadheads and one thumper. And typically I'll have like my primary broadhead. I'll have like two,
mm-hmm.
and then I'll have a broadhead, something like a different kind that I know will shoot well, just in case. You just never know.
Sometimes you shoot three deer a day.
Right. And then, I'll probably throw – I do have some small game heads this year, so I'll throw one of those on, try to hit something. But not that good of a shot, so.
Hey, that's how you get better, honestly. You practice.
Yeah.
And there's nothing like practicing on a live animal.
Yeah.
Because if you can. I mean, I don't know. When a squirrel comes out and I'm like, I'm going to shoot the squirrel, I still get that adrenaline rush. Like,
yeah.
It's do or die right now. I got to get this thing. And I always pretend like I'm starving, which half the time I am. So I'm like, my dinner depends on this squirrel right here.
So do you go down and get it and then bring it back?
I get it at the end.
Bring it back and take a bite of the raw meat?
Nah, I throw it in my old can cooker and it's actually really good. I like squirrel.
I've only had squirrel once, I think.
Oh, really? Oh, it's so good. Yeah. It's tender. It's weird. Like, you think they'd be super tough, and they are sometimes, but if you cook them right, they're tender. But I always found, a lot of friends ask me, like, they know I shoot these squirrels and stuff, and they're like, what do you do with them? Because you're going to scare all the animals away. I'm like, well, first off, I don't shoot when there's deer around. When there's deer around, I just wait.
Right. Wait until the big buck walks by, then you go back to hunting squirrels.
Yeah, yeah. I let the buck walk, and then I shoot the squirrel, and then I try to shoot the buck. But they're like, well, what happens when you shoot a squirrel? Like, what then? Do you go down and get it? Because then it's a lot of up and down, especially if you're in a climber. I'm like, no, I'll just leave it there. Well, they're all scared and worried. Like, deer will go smell it or smell like blood in the air, and then like not come in. That makes them so much more curious than anything. They go up and they'll smell my arrow.
Mm-hmm.
And it just sets them up perfect because 99% of the time they're standing dead still when that happens. And they're just trying to figure out what's going on.
Yeah.
And that's when I get my second shot.
Curiosity killed the big buck.
Yes. Or the doe.
Or the doe, yeah. Oh man, I'm excited for the season. How much are you shooting right now?
I'm shooting every day, a few hundred shots.
100 every day?
Every day. Yeah, I had to get back into it. Now I just got to figure out what site I want to use, which one of our Viper sites I want to use.
Nothing like changing up last minute, huh?
Well, the one I got's a little old, so I should upgrade.
What's on there right now?
I have a Q4 driver.
Old school. Yeah, I think I'm gonna switch the fibers out on the Spectre driver.
Okay.
The 15,000s.
Let me tell you what, that's a good site.
Yeah, I know.
I know the guy that made it.
Yeah, I know. He's sitting right across from me.
Oh yeah, that's right.
I like the 3-pin slider. I need to shoot some more. Just making a bunch of excuses why I don't get out there. But I am trying to get after training, other for just being physical, not for bow hunting, just being a boss. Trying to.
He is a boss. I know you can't see him right now, but he's a boss. When you're playing video games and you got to face that boss that's going to kick the crap out of you in Mario, yeah, that's him, but bigger. He's like Bowser.
Dude, I haven't picked up a video game in a long time. Have you played? Do you play video games?
No, not at all. The last video game I played, actually, there might have been two video games I played. One was SOCOM Navy SEALs when I was 8, so I learned a lot about military then. And then my brother and I have Xbox. And I don't even know the name of it. We have an Xbox and we play Rainbow Six Vegas, which is another, it's more of like special ops type thing. And we have a tradition, like when he comes home for Christmas from overseas, we'll play that.
Nice.
And we always lose, and I don't get it. Like, we're so, like, I don't know. If it was real life, we would be fine because we know the tactics we need to use. But in a video game, I always press the wrong button, I throw a grenade, and then everybody comes and storms us, and we die. So I don't do video games. Actually, I played Cabela's Dangerous Hunts once. Mm. Yeah, I got killed by an Impala. I didn't think that was possible. But yeah, an African, like, Impala killed me. Yep. And I shot a Cape Buffalo in the head with a recurve bow and killed it. I don't think that's possible either.
Bucket list. In real life, to go with a traditional bow, with a recurve bow, and headshot only for a Cape Buffalo. It would just bounce off the head, I'm pretty sure.
It might stick in its horn, and then it'd be ticked off and
kill me.
Yeah.
All right, I think we should sign off.
Yeah, we're getting all out of hand right now, so.
All right, guys, as I mentioned earlier, if you do have any questions you'd like us to answer, just hit us up on social at Spectre Broadheads or on our website, spectrebroadheads.com. So thanks for tuning in, guys, and we will catch you next week.
Next week. Couple weeks.
Couple weeks. I might record on one of the other guys next week.
All right, Tim will catch you next week. I'll catch you in a couple weeks.
Brady's going to go do some work.
Yep, we got to get some new products out there, man. Got some secrets I got to reveal.
See, stay tuned.